Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
All right, Jim and Jamal Potts back on the air. And thank you so much, as always, for listening to us on your Sunday afternoon or your Sunday evening, depending on whether you're the East Coast or West Coast or somewhere in between. We appreciate it. Jamal, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. Got a lot to get to today.
Yeah, we do. We do. Well, hey, our listeners, my older brother, Dr. Charles Potts, is on the line. Charles, say hello to the listeners for us real quick.
Hello, listeners. Pleasure to be on.
So we have my older brother on today. He's a doc. He's going to be talking about some things that I kind of gave everybody the heads up for. Before we get started on all this, let me just give a little disclaimer here. Charles is going to be giving you some information today on the vaccines. You know, he's going to be expressing his personal opinion, but he's not encouraging anybody to use one or the other. So if you have a question when you get ready to get your vaccine, please talk to your medical provider who knows you physically and emotionally better than Charles would. So, again, this is information we're just giving out. It's going to be general information. He's giving you his opinion about these vaccines. All right. Meanwhile, that's what we want to do. Anybody that wants to send me an email during the show, and I didn't think about this, but I've got my laptop, so I normally get these emails after the fact. So now, as I got smarter, I got my laptop next to me here. So if anybody wants to send an email during any of the shows, because people don't always like to call in, so you can send an email to listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. So if you want to send me an email during the show, I'll be able to address it and do it that way. Meanwhile, if anybody wants to call in, the number's over there over my right shoulder right here, if anybody wants to call in. At any rate, so with that in mind, let's go ahead and get busy. First of all, I really don't have anybody on blast. Jamal, you have anybody on blast this week?
Yes, I do. This week, I have a 59-year-old Russian man who decided to take a doctor's visit because he was having a hard time breathing out of his right nostril. Well, when he went to the doctor, they took x-rays. Come to find out, he had a coin that he had jammed up his nostril that's been there for 53 years. He put it there when he was 6 years old and was scared to tell his mom that he had put it there. So he completely forgot about it. So it's been up his nose for 53 years, man.
But Jamal, where do you find these things, man? I mean, you always come up with something original. Like, we'll give you that for sure.
That's my job.
Okay.
That I haven't received a check for yet.
Yeah. You get a check every twice a month, Jamal. Live with it. You're an employee. Remember that. So at any rate, if anybody's interested in getting the blogs or the email blast about upcoming show topics, hey, just text Potts Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email address. So you text Potts Associates to 22828 and enter your email, and then you'll be put on the list so that every week you'll know what we're doing beforehand. Okay, we're going to go ahead and get into these emails so we can go ahead and get
I got two more things I want to mention, man. One, I want to send a quick shout-out. I just learned about the oldest living veteran who's actually 111 years old by the name of Lawrence Brooks, who celebrated his 111th birthday in this past September. Wow. Man, I think that's remarkable, man. You know,
yeah,
shout-out to him.
Oh, yeah.
111 years old, man.
Do you know what state he's in?
Louisiana.
Louisiana, okay.
He's in Louisiana. And also, too, I want to mention, because I know it's probably going to be a topic for next week, but the top senior Iranian nuclear scientist that was actually killed near Tehran. And, of course, they're vowing for revenge. And once again, you know, we got, you know, not to bring in politics like that about whose party is what, but we have Biden coming in the office who was trying to renegotiate peace situations with them. So it'd be kind of interesting to see where this goes. And of course, they're blaming Israel for this. I guess they did it with an automatic machine gun that was control operated. Shortly after the attack happened, the remote control device exploded.
Hmm. So they can't trace where it came from. You know, people have to understand about the Middle East. The Middle East is always going to have these conflicts, man, forever. And they've had them forever and a day, and they're going to continue to have them. It's right. going to be tough. And I know that Biden is talking about, you know, restoring these relationships because, you know, and you know, when he was vice president, they gave all of that money, you know, what was it, $1 billion or whatever, you know, so, you know, Trump did away with all of that. So it's probably going to be that he brings it back, but we'll just wait and see. We'll be patient and we'll give him his opportunities. Let's get into these emails. Okay, Jim, when are these sanctuary cities going to get the message that harboring illegal aliens gives the criminal element a refuge to strike again? Today, and this would have been a few days ago, an illegal alien with a criminal past, including felony, domestic violence, assault with a deadly weapon, resisting arrest, and disturbing the peace, went on a stabbing spree at a church in San Jose, killing two and wounding three others. He had been deported three times, and now Biden is talking about amnesty for 11 million illegal aliens. What are your thoughts? Sheila from Stockton, California. Well, first of all, Sheila, these sanctuary cities we've talked about on the show before, and obviously I do not agree with sanctuary cities. I think we keep hearing these stories over and over and over again. This particular incident happened actually, again, up in San Jose. That's Santa Clara County. And the Santa Clara County has an ordinance that has told law enforcement they are not to inform ICE or any other federal agency about these individuals when they're getting ready to be released from jail or whatever the case may be. They don't tell ICE. Otherwise, ICE would go in and grab them and deport them. Now, this guy has been deported three times. He was just released in June. And, you know, like I said, he's been deported three times. I mean, this stuff has to stop. I mean, I already hear that they're lining up at the border because they know that Trump is going to be out, Biden's coming in, and he's going to be more flexible in terms of our policies. But look, we got to protect our citizens from these kind of things. So, Sheila, I appreciate you calling in about that. My thoughts are very simple. I don't believe in the sanctuary cities. I think that no criminal should be protected by any state, city, or county. And in essence, that's what they're doing. They are protecting criminals when they do this. Now, let me make something else clear. Everybody that's an illegal alien, okay, are not criminals. So don't be sending me hate mails. You know, I'm not against these people. What I'm against are people who commit crimes. These guys get deported and they're being able to slip back across the border and commit more crimes. That's what I have a problem with. All right. Some of these people come over here because they want a better life for themselves. I cannot argue with somebody wanting a better life for themselves. I mean, if I was in that situation, I might be doing the same thing. But protecting the criminal elements, in my opinion, is what I have a problem with. Jamal, how do you feel about that?
Oh, I agree 100%. And I'm glad you addressed that because I was thinking the same thing. You got to be careful about making it seem like you're blaming a whole group of people for the actions of a very few. You know, a lot of people coming over here, like you said, to make a better life for themselves. And I can't blame them for that. I can't knock anybody for that. Those are tough living conditions over there. So, but I do agree we should do away with sanctuary cities. I'm not a fan of that. And in terms of Biden, you know, you mentioned like, you know, they're all excited and lined up at the border because Biden's going to be president. Well, when he was vice president along with Barack Obama actually deported more illegals than any other president in U.S. history at the time. So I don't know why they would be lined up and excited to, you know, to, well, as you mentioned.
Let me just give you an idea, okay? The director for the Border Control, they mentioned it the other day that they're already getting the intel on the fact that they're excited about Biden. Not necessarily that they deported Jamal, but remember what Trump has put in place with stricter guidelines, but these people just can't come over. If those guidelines get released, you follow what I'm saying? It's not as much pressure. Then you have more coming over, even though they, and I agree with you, before Trump, more were ever Barack Obama deported more than any other president before him. So I get that. It's even like these kids that were in the cages. They were blaming the cages on Trump. Those are cages that were created under the Obama administration with these kids in there. But now is what they're seeing, according to what I researched and heard within the last 2 weeks, is that they're now sending children over, Jamal, with phone numbers on their bodies. And they're dropping these kids off, Jamal, illegally across the border with a phone number. And one judge, the same judge that on the Michael Flynn case, federal judge, said that we cannot send those children, back across the border. Well, there's 1,100 of them so far, Jamal, in the last few weeks that they have found with these phone numbers for you to be able to call somebody on the state side, okay, who these children may belong to, whatever the case may be. So right. I'm just telling you, okay, children, don't send me hate mail, people. I love children, okay? I have my own children, my grandchildren, et cetera. I'm just telling you what they're doing right now because they see the handwriting on the wall. That's all that I'm saying, okay? All right. Okay, let's take a look at the next one. Jim, I am a longtime listener, and have to say that you have been right on point of us not letting our guard down. This week, I heard that a South Carolina man, an American citizen, was sentenced for attempting to provide material support to ISIS. Kudos to our FBI for doing their job. For the rest of us, keep our eyes open, and Jim, keep spreading the message. Hank from Lake Charles, Louisiana. It's true. Let me tell you something. This individual from South Carolina was, in fact, first of all, there's two situations. One situation is that this guy was just arrested. But also, within the last few weeks, we have a situation where this other person, South Carolina, again, I don't know what's going on down in South Carolina, okay? But he was sentenced to 20 years in jail. Now, these mandatory 20-year sentences were established by Congress. So it's a statutory 20-year sentence when these individuals are cooperating with a foreign terrorist group. This particular individual that we're talking about, the Department of Justice, Hank is talking about, he apparently was communicating even with a guy out of Texas. So it was Christopher Sean Matthews and also Jalen Molina. All right. So Matthew was arrested, and they were planning an attack on U.S. soil because the guy has a daughter. So he was originally going to go overseas, but then he didn't want to leave his daughter. So one of the agreements that he was making was he would do an attack on U.S. soil so he wouldn't have to leave his daughter. And wherever they attacked, the agreement was it was not going to be a place where they have children because he has children of his own. Well, he's been caught. The FBI informants, have gotten these people. And, that's what happened. So, yes, he's been caught. The FBI did their job. And we also have where people a year ago, the same thing. So this is not new. We got to understand that we got to keep our guard open up at all times. So, Hank, I appreciate you doing that. Okay, got an email coming in. What Biden wants us to do is create a path for citizenship. It would include paying a fine for those who are here illegally. Then they would have to go through the usual formality that immigrants go through for citizenships. Many of these people have been here for years with jobs and kids that were born here. Okay, you know what? That's a good point. I don't disagree with that. So remember what I'm also talking about. I'm talking about my focus is on the criminal element. So I want to make that clear. We have people that have come here and that have been good, honest citizens, and I get that, okay? So I think there has to – I don't totally disagree with the email saying that we have to – Biden's going to create a path for citizenship. But the reality is, Jamal, how many years have we heard about this path for citizenship? This isn't new. I mean, we've heard about this, okay? So they're always talking about a path for citizenship, but it never seems like there's a total agreement, okay? Because, again, Washington, to me, these people don't agree with each other on stuff, and I just think that it's bad, okay? But that's what we have, a two-party system. So, yes, I agree. There are people here that have worked hard, that have had jobs. Path for citizenship, okay, I'm buying into it, but let's just see what that entails. But I don't believe with a magic wand, where you just wave this magic wand, 11 million people all of a sudden, okay, you're all American citizens. There's got to be, in my opinion, some requirements with that, so we'll wait and see, all right, and see how that goes. But, you know, they want to do this, in my opinion. 11 million people. Come on. That's all about the votes. And that's what that's about, in my opinion. So at any rate, getting yeah, go ahead, Charles.
Jimmy, can I interject something here?
Absolutely.
Part of my background includes working in the corrections environment with about 15 years experience from the front line to medical director, right, even corporate medical director. Part of that experience includes working with ICE inmates.
Okay.
And there was somewhat of a shift and modification of the law that resulted in retroactively a large number of people who had been here for decades because of technicalities were no longer considered citizens if they had misdemeanors, et cetera. So I was taking care of heads of household who have raised their children here, paid taxes here, been in the military here. One was from Italy. His kids were all grown, all out of the house. He was now in his 50s, came here when he was 12. And, you know, he was on the taxi table being considered for exportation. Some of these guys were locked up for at least a couple of years that I know of. So we've been struggling with the whole immigration problem, and it cuts across a lot of country backgrounds. Now, one of the things that we deal with in healthcare is how do we care for the elderly? Part of that care for the elderly relates to how many people does it take to support in the workforce the retirement population. Statistics in Japan were used, and the ratio of workers to retirees or seniors at one point was 1-to-1. Now, the ratio was much better in this country. But as Western states have lower birth rates and populations increase, the workforce needs to be replenished, but Americans aren't having as many kids. So we're losing that trajectory. Now, the result of that 1-to-1 was that more than 50% of your income went to support of people who are no longer able to support themselves because they had aged out of the workforce. So there is something behind how we bring people into a country to create a workforce. Where do they come from? What kind of skills are you looking for? It's a work in progress. So I don't think it's entirely that people from other places want to come here, and we don't need other people to come here.
Oh, don't get me wrong, Charles.
You can start having more babies in this country. That'll modify the trajectory of it. But there is an economic reason that considerations for immigration or creating a younger workforce are out there. And I understand what you're saying. There's both sides of it. And the bad cases have a tendency to stand out, and the people who are good working citizens and maybe even, you know, in a sanctuary or through something legitimate,
well, Charles,
you know, they're not the troublemakers.
Let me clarify something. First of all, I don't disagree with what you're saying and the logic behind it, but there has to be the right way to do it. People can come here and they can apply for this citizenship. I'm saying they can do all of that the right way. Okay, that's what we're talking about. As long as they are doing, you know, the pathway, like they talk about a pathway to the citizenship. Okay, that's great. I don't mind it being a pathway to citizenship. I welcome these other people. They want to come in here and work. I'll say one thing as an example about the Latino culture population. John, I those guys are hardworking people, in my opinion. So I don't mind. Okay, and some of them are willing to do jobs that other minorities won't do. Go ahead, Jamal.
No, I agree with you 100%. I worked, you know, a long time ago when I first got into the workforce, I was doing blue collar labor, and their work ethic is totally different. You know what I mean? And I learned a lot from working with them. And but no, I agree. We do need them, but I do agree that there has to be a better pathway, something so we can monitor who's coming in and out of the country. So,
and we're
that's
not
the
just talking
line.
About, let's just be clear, because I don't want the listeners to think we're only talking about people coming up, you know, from Mexico. I'm not just talking about Mexico. There's a lot of people. When I was doing my security work, I'll call it, with the LA County Sheriff's Department, I learned a lot of, you know, these people come from all over the world. They just come up through our southern border. So there's more people coming here that are illegal. So when I say 11 million people, I'm not just talking about 11 million people that are Latino. There are other people here, Asia, Africa. I mean, there's a lot of countries where people come up through this, through our southern border. And I'm telling you, we have to keep that, because what also comes with that are diseases. Okay. I mean, one of the things they're concerned about right now, obviously, is COVID-19. So some of these people that are coming here unchecked, coming through, not that we don't all have the issue right now, but that's just an example, you know, that people may be concerned about. Let's get to this last email real quick. All right. And then, because actually it pertains to Charles anyway. Jim, I saw your brother is a doctor and is going to be on your show. Talk about a family of overachievers, LOL. anyway, then he says, anyway, please ask him about wearing masks. We've heard so much about it. You know, what is the best, you know, what is the best mask to wear? Thanks, Kyle from Nashville, Tennessee. Well, Charles, I guess that segues right into you coming into the picture today. So, you know, this business about masks, we do hear a lot about masks. So, Charles, maybe that's a good place to start. What's your opinion about the mask situations?
Well, there are masks that, well, let's talk about what the mask is designed to do. Think of it as a gobstopper. It is going to keep large droplets of potentially infectious fluids from traveling through the distance or the space between one person and another person in, you know, a regular environment. Now, the virus itself is too small to be stopped by the mask unless you have like an N95 mask. They're very expensive. Some people can't really breathe too well with them. But you really don't need an N95 unless you happen to be in a clinical situation. Now, the mask is only part of what you need to do for the general public. The mask keeps, it's a protection from exchange of droplets, which can carry a significant number of infectious particles, either landing on surfaces or through the air. Now, the mask, without a mask, the distance or space that a virus would ordinarily travel would be 6 to 8 feet. So that's really where you're going with the 6 foot distance. If you could do 8 feet, that would be even better. And in that time, it's expected that it would sink to the ground, so to speak. Now, the virus is small enough to go through your regular cloth mask. And as there was a lady on TV about some other issue, and she had one on that was knitted.
Knitted?
I mean, knit, like bulky knit mask. That is a non-mask. You'd be better off pulling a T-shirt over your head. You can see through those faces.
She just wanted to wear something cute because it was knitted and somebody knitted it for her. But y'all,
but if you got 2-ply, 3-ply, or you got a mask with a filter, that's sufficient. But that goes with the social distancing, because the virus travels through the mask. You still need the social distancing to protect you from, you know, the virus itself. Masks protect with the droplets. The distancing decreases the liability of you actually getting contact with a regular virus.
So let me ask you this. So if two people are wearing a mask, Charles, and one person does have, unbeknownst to them, have COVID-19, but both people are wearing a mask, and most people are wearing those blue masks that they look like they're, I don't want to say surgical mask or whatever the case may be. So if they're standing 4 feet apart, both people are wearing a mask, one of them has COVID-19, okay, are they going to be able to withstand? And I know this is just speculative. So if the person has the mask on, is it going to get through that mask, travel across, and get into the other mask, penetrate the other mask, do you think?
You don't, if you don't have one with the micropores small enough to stop a virus, they're also protecting against exchange of fluid, droplets.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, so 4 feet away, and 50% of the people with COVID potentially are infectious and don't know it. So if you're going to be out in public and you wanted to do something for yourself that related to barrier, you got two barriers, the distance and the mask. You don't have to have an N95 mask unless you're around somebody that you know actually has it. Chances are they're in isolation and you're not near them anyway. But a lot of people don't know they have it and they're asymptomatic. The mortality rate, when you look at the numbers and you do the math on it, is about 2.1% the last time I looked at it. Now, that doesn't mean you won't end up in the hospital. Chances are you stand a 98% chance, let's say, of having a mild case of it and recovering from it, or not even know that you had it.
So, okay, let's talk about these droplets, 8 to 10 feet apart. So are you saying that, okay, if I'm standing 6 feet from Jamal, as an example, and Jamal, let's just say, has CV19, and he's talking to me, what's the force that's coming out here with these droplets? I mean, are we talking just by virtue of speaking that these things are going to project out, or, halfway?
Well, the droplets, the aerosol or droplet can happen when you're speaking without a barrier. It happens anyway. And you really kind of notice it brings it home when they started putting up the plexiglass shield in the stores.
Uh-huh.
And people not wearing masks, you see all this stuff on that plastic shield. Well, then you realize that people, without even realizing it, on either side of the counter are exposing each other to droplets.
So you're saying that it's basically invisible, so to speak. So if I'm speaking naturally with Jamal, not shouting, just speaking naturally, Jamal, there is a certain amount of fluid, you're saying, that's being expelled into the air by him talking naturally.
And some people more than others.
I think he's saying that the barrier of wearing a mask catches quite a bit of it.
Right.
That's what it sounded like he was saying. Right. So it reduces
Correct. The mask itself is going to capture. That's one reason you're not supposed to just keep wearing the mask, wearing the mask, wearing the mask. It's either disposable or wash it.
Well, that's another question, because I carry a mask in my car. I have it there. I use it. I get out, I run into the post office, got my mask on, get back into the car, and take the mask off. So you're saying, and I use those blue surgical masks, but I also use I have some of the cloth masks, as well. So what you're saying is that even with the blue mask, that at some point, you're not going to just keep using it, even though I don't use it that much. I mean, 15 seconds in, 15 seconds out, but you're saying those are disposable. So how often should we be tossing those? As not the cloth mask, I get that.
Well, if I was wearing a disposable one all day, I'd throw it away at the end of the day. It all depends on the environment and the high risk that you're in. You're putting a mask on and you're just breathing. You're not talking to anybody going to the post office and coming back. It's barely being used in that regard.
And that's basically what it is. I mean, I go into the store, wear it and come back out and take it off. I mean, I don't go into these environments where there's a whole bunch of people, quite frankly. And in our office, we have everybody pretty much spaced apart. If anybody comes into our office to drop something off, they got to leave it at the front desk where nobody is sitting and just drop it there and turn around and leave out. So we keep the office pretty sterile from that standpoint. But the cloth masks you're saying are basically, you see all these people selling them and you see them in the stores now. They look nice and all of this.
There's nothing wrong with that. That does help.
Yeah,
some probably better than others, depending on the thread count. Don't get one that's knitted. So, yes, they are helpful, and the distance is helpful. a mask by itself in a crowd is not protecting you from the virus. It's at best protecting you from droplets.
And obviously we know about the washing of the hands and things of that nature, 20 seconds, good soapy water. So from that
and surfaces, keeping your surfaces clean too.
And your surfaces as well. Okay.
So like surfaces, contact surfaces.
Right, right. Well, we do that in the office. We have somebody that when they come in the morning, they do the outside door handle in case somebody, you know, touched it, you know, during, you know, off hours. The bathroom surfaces and things of that nature, you know. So, again, that's just good hygiene. Go ahead, Jamal.
I think it would be good to point out, too, if you have a reusable mask, the importance of having several of them to keep repeatedly washing them constantly throughout the week instead of wearing the same one for a month straight.
Oh, you mean the cloth ones?
Yeah, the cloth ones, the reusable ones, yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah. Well, that'd be more of a risk for you because of the virus, depending on the surface, may persist for a while. And it may get more and more buildup of virus particles within a particular time frame. It could put you at risk. It wouldn't hurt to exercise with that.
Yeah, your voice is getting kind of fuzzy. I don't know if you changed positions or whatever. Okay, well, look, I think that's good about the – I think the mask, I think we've kind of covered that. I can't think of any other questions on that. Jamal, do you have any other questions about that? I mean, I think it's pretty straightforward what he's saying.
Absolutely. I'm interested in hearing about the vaccine options that are coming available.
Right. Before we get into the vaccines, let's talk about herd immunity. Oh, I'm sorry, Charles. Was there something else you're going to say about the mask?
No, you just getting ready to mention herd.
Right. You know, you hear a lot about this herd immunity. So before we get into the vaccines, because I know there's some nations, because there is no vaccine right now, that are preaching about herd immunity. So maybe just cover that for, you know, give us some insight on that real quick.
Well, herd immunity is a valid concept. And the development of vaccines is an opportunity to control the development of herd immunity. You follow? You're just artificially hastening that. Now, by shortening the window for herd immunity, then you are creating an opportunity for more people to suppress the virus and have less of it circulating through the population. Now, you're also giving the virus less time to mutate, but it also depends on, you know, the size of your population. Characteristics, rural versus urban, and the health demographics, which we'll get into what some of what we're talking about with the other thing. But so herd immunity has helped people survive throughout our, you know, 100 million years. And what that relates to is when you get sufficient people infected by an organism and develop resistance, then you don't have the immense mortality and morbidity. The disease becomes milder and milder because your body recognizes it. Your body has the ability to recognize something and then through memory cells to create a blueprint of it. So when it's re-exposed to it, it knows how to deal with it. And some of your vaccines, that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So herd immunity as a natural immunity is effective. Now, you don't know who's going to get exposed in the herd. And depending on the genetic makeup of the herd, you could have a very high attrition. In other words, a high mortality as it sweeps through. So let's take, for example, the influenza epidemic of 1918, the mother of all epidemics. That epidemic killed 50 million people. That's quite a lot of people. 30 to 50 million people were killed in that epidemic. But subsequent epidemics related to that particular strain of influenza didn't kill off as many. So what you're looking at is a shift in a virus that was devastating because there wasn't enough genetic resistance or defense inherent in the population. Mm-hmm. Now, when you get exposed to an organism, be it a bacteria or a virus, there's an initial response. It takes about 90 days to develop antibodies to it. So you had the bird flu, the swine flu, and the different variations of that. But they all go back to that 1918 pandemic. Mm. It affected 500 million people. Mm-hmm. The population at that time, that was one-third of the world's population. Mm-hmm. The population now is 7.8 billion. Mm. But what does that tell you? You certainly have a lot more people closer together. 80% of the people on the planet live in coastal areas. So 80% of 7.8 billion people is living in coastal areas, as opposed to 70% of 1.5 billion. Mm-hmm. So you have people a lot closer together. Right. You also have, compared to 1918, look at the world travel that you have. The food in this country comes from 200 different countries because we don't grow as much of it ourselves. We got monocultivations and droughts and things like that. So we get food from all over the world. And like you said, you have illegal aliens, well, people coming across the borders that don't have health checks. Well, it goes both ways. You have people traveling to other countries. Sandflies are one-third the size of the mosquito. And you can go have fun at a beach someplace, the Riviera, and come back with leishmaniasis. You can't even see something that small biting you.
I can't even spell
malaria. It. Malaria. Somebody dies from malaria. Somebody dies in this world from malaria once every minute.
Really?
Once every second, somebody in the world is infected by, once every second, is infected by TB.
Charles, we got
go ahead.
I was going to say, we got an email from somebody. Let me read this to you real quick. It says, what do you think about the 100% exemption for protesters where there's no restrictions at all, mask or social distancing? I'm not sure if that question is directed at you and me, but what do I think about exemption for protesters? There shouldn't be an exemption for protesters. You know, just to answer that question very quickly. I think that the protesters should abide by whatever the rules are. But again, there's people out there. You can't force people to wear masks. So if you can't force them to wear a mask, they're going to do what the heck they want to do. And law enforcement's already said things like they're not going to be enforcing some of this. I wanted to address the question that the person put out there real quick. So go ahead, Charles. Finish that last thought before we get into the vaccinations, because I'm trying to watch your time, too.
Okay. Well, there's a tree of knowledge, and there must be a tree somewhere called the tree of ignorance. There it is. You know, all you can do is educate people. You try to give them enough of an understanding. This is not about rights. Right. This is not even about the U.S., and it definitely isn't about your freedom within your own house. You can have all of that you want. The reality is you have 10 to the 13 cells in your body. You have 10 to the 14 microbes in your body. That means for every cell you have that has DNA in it, there are 10 microorganisms, each with their own unique DNA. And your body protects you against over-invasion or over-development of any of those. Now, compound that with, as you get older, your body changes. What you're exposed to, your body changes. Where you travel, it changes what's going on inside your body. And within that microbiome, there is mutation. That's how the 1918 pandemic was. There's a mutation within it. 70% or more of what it is that we get starts out in animals. Mm. And we're continually associated with animals. So when you get something that changes from, that stays in the bird population, but now crosses over to a pig population, and you got more people in proximity to swine, then you end up with something called swine flu. These things can change. You had a group in Wisconsin experimenting with ferrets to create aerosolized versions of adenovirus. So the world is very complex. The microbiology of it is fragile. Now, if it is recommended, nobody's trying to infringe on your rights. It's for your own good. Here's the thing. You don't know genetically if you have a missing gene or an impaired gene that's going to make you one of the victims of COVID. You also don't know whether or not you have vitamin or nutritional deficiencies that will make you more susceptible to a devastating pneumonia, sepsis, and a cytokine storm that not only can but probably will kill you. So when we talk about the vaccines that are out there, they're about, the World Health Organization has, depending on where you read, anywhere from 9 to 15 to 20 potential organisms that can evolve into an epidemic or pandemic. So the world has been watching this even since the 1920s to come up with ways, an emergency medical response protocol to manage widespread biological devastation. Now, this is not new. In the Middle Ages, they used to take smallpox cadavers and shoot them by catapult into the enemy's camps or forts. So, you mentioned terrorism. There's all kinds of that throughout the history, going back to the Middle Ages. So, when you talk about the seriousness of being able to protect a population that is increasingly closer and closer together from airborne respiratory potentially devastating illnesses, the vaccines are what's going to save you. Now, looking at the vaccine, you got the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine, which are mRNA. That's messenger RNA. They manufactured it with gene sequences. So consider this an artificial one. They wrap it in a lipid, which is a fat envelope, and inject it into the body. Now, viruses in particular, I sent you some pictures. These particular viruses that we're talking about have spikes. Now, in order for it to attach to one of your cells, then it needs that spike. What the artificially created vaccine of Pfizer and Moderna does is it binds with those spikes to keep them from attaching to the cell, to keep it, therefore, from getting into the cell and creating the havoc that it can by injecting and inserting its own DNA. Are you with me?
Yeah, I am, because I saw that picture that you sent me, so I get it. Basically, it wraps around there, and basically it stops them from getting in your cell, which stops you from getting sick.
Right.
Which brings up
another... Right. Imagine trying to pick up a penny with a boxing glove on.
Right.
Your fingers have been neutralized.
Right.
They're no longer useful for that. What? So now, if you look, that's the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine.
Okay.
The other vaccine, the AstraZeneca, which is what it is that you're hearing more about, developed in Oxford, has two effectiveness. The full dose was only 62% effective. The half strength was 90% effective. That one may become available in the U.S. They're still looking at that. The AstraZeneca has less side effects than Pfizer or Moderna. And by side effects, we're talking about maybe headache, malaise, fatigue for several days. But you live. Now, the AstraZeneca one, that one is not a manufactured messenger RNA strand. What they did was they took an adenovirus, which is associated with the common cold. And they took that virus and they modified its DNA to combine it with a coronavirus spike protein. So it's similar in that they both use the spike protein. They target the spike protein. But one uses a different kind of virus that's very common that in and of itself isn't going to give you any significant symptoms. But once it gets included into your cell, then your body will make a defense against the spike protein of the coronavirus. So you see the difference?
Yeah.
One, they used a natural solution. One, they created the messenger RNA, put it in something artificial that's circulating in your body. Your body starts duplicating it, and you they both have the same final common pathway of attacking the spike protein. The most significant thing is the Pfizer one has a supply chain distribution problem in terms of making it widespread. The Moderna, less so. They have to be kept at temperatures that you're not going to find anywhere unless you create cold storage like UPS did. So UPS created cold storage warehouses to move this across the country. In developing countries, you're going to have to go with the AstraZeneca because that can be kept at routine refrigerator for 3 months and can last 6 months. The problem with the artificially created one is we don't know how long that is going to be stable and how long. You don't know how long it's going to create immunity. So that's new. So they need 3 months, maybe a little more, to figure out how long that's going to last or how long it's going to create antibodies. The AstraZeneca one cost about $10. The Russian one also uses an adenovirus, and so does the Johnson & Johnson one. Now, the Johnson & Johnson one, I believe, was only about $3. No, the AstraZeneca cost is about $3. $20 is about the cost of Pfizer and $25 to $37 for Moderna per dose. The Sputnik one or the Russian one, which is an adenovirus, costs about $10. Now, the Johnson & Johnson one is a single dose. So for people who only want to get stuck once, then Johnson & Johnson could be the way to go. If you live someplace that's rural and you're not going to be able to get there, because once you take it out of cold storage, you have like 5 hours to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not stable.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Charles, one thing you and I did talk about also off the air, this is beforehand, was people of a certain age. So you said people over 50 or 55, you know, they may consider the Oxford one, I think, as I remember you saying. Did I get that?
Well, it had less side effects for people 65 and older or 60 and older.
Mm-hmm.
So for side effect profile, so far the AstraZeneca one sounds better. The half-strength dose is 90% effective. The Moderna and the Pfizer are about 95% effective. So, which are both pretty high. The influenza vaccine is roughly 50%, and some of the other vaccines are roughly 50%. But then again, in order to get FDA approval, you had to be a minimum of 50%.
Charles,
so people did.
Got a quick question.
So people did the minute.
That just jumped up here. Email question. It says, no one seems to talk about the side effects of the vaccine. Will they likely be the same kind of side effects a person may get from a yearly flu vaccine?
Well, yes. I would expect that. Now, it seems to be a little bit more in terms of malaise, maybe some discomfort at the injection site. But everything that I've seen, these mild symptoms don't last any more than 3 to 5 days. Now, these things are not curing COVID. What they're doing is reducing your symptoms and preventing the virus from becoming so widespread in your body that it shuts your system down. The flu vaccine, for example, when you get that, you go in, you got flu symptoms, and they give you a shot. What it does is decrease your symptoms for about shorten the course by about 2 days. This, the AstraZeneca one, they're really looking at optimistically preventing you from getting it. We need more time, probably another 60 days. It may depend on the number of people that volunteer for research who can be followed. So the Oxford study is following people from the initial testing and injection and then testing each week to see if and when they'll lose immunity.
All right. Well, Charles, listen, we want to appreciate the time that you got, because I'm looking at the time. We're at three. It's okay. Time. But that was really very, very good insight. And we do appreciate you having been on here. And again, I caution everybody to make sure they talk with their medical provider to see what is the best for them. All right, Jamal, any closing statements you want to make real quick?
Nothing. I just want to thank Dr. Potts for coming on here with us today. I appreciate you coming out here on a Sunday. Thank you, sir.
All right, then. Hey, you've been listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts and Jamal Potts on LA Talk Radio. Now it's time to close out the show. Hey, do us a favor. If you like what you heard, spread the word. And don't forget this show has been archived. So if you want to spread it to some of your friends to listen to, have them tune into the archive so that they can listen to the show from today. Thank you, everybody, and be safe.
Bye.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.